DW Africa Link.
I remember meeting Muhammadu Buhari back in 2015, a moment etched into my memory, not because of what I expected, but because of what I didn't. He was soft-spoken, composed, and contrary to the image that many had painted of a stern, unapproachable former general, he offered me a handshake before I even had the chance to offer mine. For someone often described as rigid, distant, or cold, especially toward women, what I encountered was very human, very different. Now, as news breaks of his passing, Nigeria pauses. Not just to mourn a former president, but to unpack a legacy that's as layered as the man himself. To some, he was a symbol of order and anti-corruption. To others, a missed opportunity, a man whose promises collided with harsh realities. Today, we take a moment not just to mark the end of an era, but to reflect on the contradictions, the convictions, and the complexities of a man who once led with quiet eyes and left behind a thunderous legacy. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Nigeria's former president, Muhammadu Buhari, died in London on Sunday, July 13, 2025, after a prolonged illness, a presidential spokesperson wrote in a post on X. He did not disclose the nature of the 82-year-old's illness. Buhari had been in the UK for the past 3 months. Buhari first led Africa's most populous nation as a military ruler after a coup in the 1980s. He later rebranded himself as a quote converted Democrat and then defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan in 2015 in what was judged to be Nigeria's fairest election to date. He remained in power until 2023. From military strongman to elected president, Muhammadu Buhari's legacy divides Nigeria. He was hailed for his anti-corruption drive and security focus, but criticized for economic woes and rising insecurity. Now, as the nation reflects on his passing, what will history remember most? Joining me for this conversation is Dengiefa Angalapu, a political scientist and research analyst with the Center for Democracy and Development, CDD, and DW correspondent in Abuja, Abiodun, Jamiu. Just to find out from you, Abiodun, as our eyes and ears on the ground, on the mood in Abuja and other major cities, or maybe should I just say Nigeria at large?
The mood in Abuja is sober, but measured at the same time. You know, at the government level, there's a clear sense of reference to the late president. The government has asked that the flags be flown at half mast. His political allies, especially, also describe him as a man of principles and modesty. So, but if you step away from the corridor of power and look at the streets, the reactions are mixed. You know, there are others that saw him as a man of integrity, but others also under him, you know, experienced hardship, economic hardships, and difficulties for many Nigerians. In fact, at some point, they named him Baba Go Slow because of his slow response to critical issues. So these are the general atmosphere in Abuja and other city currently.
And Dengiefa, just to also talk about the man who has just passed on, he first came to power in 1983 through a military coup. And many say he ruled with an iron fist before he was ousted in less than 2 years. But decades later in 2015, He made history as the first opposition candidate to win a presidential election in Nigeria. What legacy does Buhari leave behind? What will he be remembered for the most?
Condolences to Nigerians, condolences to his family. Beyond his military background, Buhari is the first opposition president to unseat an incumbent democratically elected president in Nigeria. He became very, very popular even in the democratic dispensation. So that's one legacy that I think that people would remember him for. That democratic confidence that it gave to the opposition party is one legacy that I think he will remember for. The second thing, again, is his anti-corruption crusade. Right from his military era, he was known as a disciplinarian. He was always known for his anti-corruption in a rhetoric. And yes, to be fair, he actually did a few things that got in the direction of strengthening Nigerian anti-corruption process. So one was implementing the single treasury account. But critics will argue that oftentimes the fight against corruption was very, very selective, targeting political opponents. And then it was more as though the cronies of the presidents were actually exempted. The other thing is the security rhetoric. Buhari came into power with the promise that he was going to deal with insecurity in Nigeria. Let's not forget, at the time he came into power, Boko Haram was a very big deal. In 2014, fatality rate had risen. And in West Africa, Nigeria's fatality rate and incident rate had skyrocketed. It was so high. If you look at it, if you look at just Boko Haram, you would say, okay, possibly it did fairly well, especially introducing components like Operation Safe Corridor that radicalizes as Boko Haram combatants, even though that also raised challenges of him being favorable to terrorists or being a terrorist apologist and all of that. But, I mean, to be fair, it did well in that regard. But if you look at it critically, you realize that insecurity became worse in its time. Beyond this partial clustering of security in the Northeast, security challenges moved from just the Northeast to the Northwest, where you had banditry. The North Central became a hotbed of farmer-herder conflict, and including banditry. We had the resurgence of militants in the Niger Delta. That was when he had the Niger Delta Vengeance in 2016. Then, of course, let's not forget the autonomous agitations in the Southeast, you know, where you had the IPOP challenge. It became a very big deal. And his rhetoric towards managing that also was very problematic, where he would say the Southeast is a dot, you know, and very, 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 very ethnicized and, you know, statements that people will interpret as not being very sensitive.
In terms of security, where do you think really Buhari went wrong? What could he have done better?
There was a lot he could have done better. First off, you know, I think he had the opportunity to really de-escalate the IPOP situation. But the kind of statements that he put out there, you know, and his policies towards the Southeast increased the level of hate, increased the level of antagonism between the North and the South, especially the Southeast and then the North. Let's not forget what we have as the Eastern Security Network, which is, of course, the armed organ of the IPOP sect, although sometimes they disassociate themselves with it, right? The justification that they gave for forming that armed group was simply based off of the fact that they were responding to the infiltration of herders from the northern part of Nigeria to the southern part of Nigeria, especially to the southeast. And basically, their reason was that Buhari's government was basically supporting his kinsmen who are herders. So I think that the rhetorics and, you know, the level of consultation he did across Nigeria with respect to resolving the security situation was not enough. And when it came to the Northwest, there was so much silence and neglect till banditry became a big deal. With respect to intelligence gathering, with respect to seeing how you can deal with situations before they escalate, was something that was missing in action when it came to when it was Buhari's tenure.
Right, right. Now let's take it to the young Nigerians with you, Abiodun. I mean, for many young Nigerians, his legacy is tied to the 2020 NSAS protests and the deadly military crackdown that followed. His administration also banned Twitter after it deleted one of his controversial posts and was marked by rising insecurity, like what Dengiefa was just saying here, poverty, corruption, and declining press freedom. Let's talk about that. How are ordinary Nigerians reacting to his death, and what do people on the streets say about his legacy?
Among the older generations, conservative northern Nigerians, you know, people remember the image of a humble president, you know, who would ever build mansion, who never flaunt wealth, just like the Nigerian politicians are known for. But when you look at the divide in the South, especially among the young generations, most of us remember Buhari for economic hardship, you know, repression, particularly the NSAS protests, and how his government responded. So you realize that the soldiers, instead of de-escalating the situation, end up, you know, open fire on innocent protesters. So these are some of the issues. So in the South, in the Middle West, they endure too much for them to mourn. But in fact, there are Nigerians that are even still on social media currently making jests or making jokes out of his death, that he could not even die in his own country. Despite being president, he died in London. So for many, the reaction is divided.
Now, just also to hear from Nigerian citizens themselves, the most significant achievements and failures of Buhari's presidency.
Yeah, for the biggest achievements, especially, they will mention that infrastructure particularly. Roads, railway, bridge, well, for all the criticisms he had faced, actually, even his opponents often admit that his government built things. When you look at the Abuja, Kaduna Abuja Railway, when you look at the highway that leads to Makurdi, and using looted funds to cook funds. So all of these says that he actually did well when it comes to infrastructures. During the final days, you know, he also signed the Petroleum Industry Act after more than two decades of delay. So that move, especially among stakeholders, was widely praised. In agriculture too, there was the Anchor Borrowers Program. So his achievement also cut across all sectors, despite the fact that he still has his shortcomings. But those successes in the eyes of many Nigerians, you know, are particularly overshadowed by his failure. To be honest, he did quite very well in some of the sectors.
I mean, one thing again that I think we need to highlight with respect to his legacy is the fact that no matter how we look at him, and I mean, he was again very, very slow, but he was the one that signed to law the 2023 Electoral Act. That act brought about a revolution with respect to the use of technology, even though that has not gone as planned. I mean, but it was a step in the right direction that could be improved for the 2027 elections. Because before his time, people were very, very skeptical about, you know, mandating or allowing technology, you know, putting that technological clause into law to ensure that Nigerians are guided by technology, with use of technology during elections. So I think that is one kudos that we could also give to him. But what we cannot ignore is the perceptions of Nigerians, whether it is based on proven evidence or just based on perceptions or misinformation. Right, what is out there is really that Buhari did not do very, very well, because I think it's basically because of the mismatch between his promises and what he delivered. This was somebody that said he was going to make 1 naira equals to $1. And we saw the dollar skyrocketing. We saw the naira depreciating. This was somebody that came to power saying that he was going to deal with corruption. If you look at Nigerian corruption index, We're still just around one place. We're not going further. We're not going backward. We're just around one place. You know, one step backward, sometimes two steps forward, and all of that. So, I actually think that Nigerians expected more. And the whole issue is that if Buhari had not been the president, right, in 2015, and he died today, Buhari would have been celebrated more. Let's not forget, each time that Buhari contested elections, even when he had not joined the APC coalition, it was almost having like 12 million votes. So he had this level of cult followership, and that was only demystified when he became the president, and they saw that he was all of the things that he was saying could not be implemented, during his time.
So the Buhari that was there during the time when he took over power after the coup, and the Buhari in 2015, would we say, Dengi, there are two different Buharis? Because I remember when he was campaigning for the 2015, many people were talking about how he would ensure that every Saturday the streets are clean. You know, people were talking about all positive stuff that he did during that era. So would you say these were now like two different Buharis?
No, it wasn't remarkably different. What had happened was that his military regime was very short, so people could not see enough of him. And in Nigeria, we know that corruption is a very, very big issue. We believe, and I still believe that if you deal with corruption, it has a link to socioeconomic development, because I mean you are going to save a lot of money, you are going to get many people, you are going to ensure that the accountability projects will be monitored and all of that. So the corruption is one reason why governance is not delivered to the people. Dividends of governance is not delivered to the people optimally. So when it came with this logic of I am going to deal with corruption, especially riding on the fact that Jonathan's government was one that was so criticized about, you know, issues of corruption. Let's not forget that the issue of Dasuki Gate and all of that. You know, so when it came with those promises, Nigerians said, "Oh, this is the right man. If we are going to get people accountable, we are going to have enough money to develop." And it means that if this man is a disciplinarian, right, you cannot afford to take contract and not deliver. So let's not forget Nigerians have this sense of military being very disciplined and choose to do the right thing. So that was the mindset that they had. But when they came into power, they did not see all of those things coming up. Because at some point, Nigerians were becoming frustrated that, I think in a democracy, people just do what they like, you know, and then the process sometimes is very, very slow. No one wants to be punished and all of that. And they feel that this man, when you do something wrong, he would punish you. But unfortunately, when he came into power, he did his best. However, I don't think that Nigerians are really happy about, you know, the mismatch between the promises and its level of output. Let's not forget, when the Tinubu government came in, even the Tinubu's government, being an APC government, you know, had to systematically say, well, I think that the other government did not do very, very well. And it was also partly the reason that, you know, the economy has been so devastated that subsidy was removed, because the Tinubu government felt we can no longer bear this kind of cost when the economy is in this kind of shape. So they expected somebody that is prudent, someone that is frugal, but the Buhari they saw was not that kind of person.
Right. Now the Buhari that Nigerians saw is gone. He has passed on. But as we wrap up our discussion, Abiodun, just to find out his policies' impact on youth, women, marginalized communities' daily life.
During his administration, I remember I was still a student, so I have a lot to say about what many Nigerians faced and also went through. Buhari's years in office were a form of frustration. You know, they entered adulthood during this time, just like myself, only to find a country with few jobs, rising costs, and little space for expression, because during this time, there were massive crackdown on voices. It was during this time that Twitter was banned, that this X, formerly Twitter, was banned. We had a lot of attack on journalists, New York journalists that were recorded, and press freedom was not even spared. So university students spent months at home due to ASUU strike and youth unemployment. So when the people organized protests, just like the answers that we mentioned, they were met with violence. So many young people today saw that their political awakening happened under Buhari. And not because he inspired them, but because they saw us and how bad governance could be. So women too, for instance, even during his administration, for instance, the Buhari cabinet had few women in his public remark, like the infamous line where he said, "Women belong in the kitchen." You know, we all remember what that means and the statements it makes about feminism, about women and equality. So saying that reflect deeper cultural attitudes from Buhari. So, but also under his watch, the gender equality bill was also rejected. So it's a whole lot. So for marginalized communities, we saw how he handled the IPOB secessionist agitations, cracking down on the group. So in ways in which dialogues could have actually solved this issue if he had treaded that path.
Now, Dengi, also to wrap up with you, your parting words in terms of our leaders, what legacy should mean really to them, even in looking at the Nigeria's democratic evolution, where Buhari now ranks among the country's post-independence leaders. And also just a tweet I saw from one of the top lawyers in Nigeria, as you wrap up and give us your parting words to touch on that. He said, and I quote, "To all the people posting outrageous and morally unconscionable tweets about death of a sitting president, I just want you to know that courts are about to go on vacation. Any arrest now is still October. But anyways, we will still demand for your release. I just said I should let you guys know, but go ahead, freely express your opinions." In terms of also how Africans, we perceive death, and how openly people are even cursing and, speaking ill of a dead man. Just your comment on that, Dengi.
I think that it is fundamentally flawed when we equate silence with respect. People must talk about you if you're a public leader. And I think that this should be a lesson to every leader in Nigeria. I mean, wherever you're leading, whether you're the president, you're the governor, and even if you're a local government chairman or chairperson, right? It should give you that consciousness that people will talk about you when you are alive and even when you're dead, because ultimately your policies affect people. And then you cannot expect that whether good or bad, they wouldn't talk about you. I mean, it is also a very flawed logic that when people die, we shouldn't talk about the bad things that they've done. For us to be balanced, we must talk about the good things and the bad things that they've done holistically. And I do not think that is a crime. So I think telling people not to talk about some of the issues that have happened that affect them, that have plunged them into poverty, that have also elevated their life in some way or some form, I think that it is also that is also a problem in itself. So for Buhari has gone, but I think it's a lesson that we all must learn as we pass through this phase of life. We've talked about some of his good legacies, we've talked about some of the controversial issues that he had, but ultimately the lesson is that we are accountable, we are accountable when we are alive, and even when we die, we become history and we must talk about it. People will write about this, people will talk about this, and it's a lesson for our current leaders to ensure that we do the right thing and ensure that when people talk about us, they find a lot of positive things that they would, that they can bring about and talk, and then praise about us. For Buhari, really, even when you are gone, basically, I think we should think of our families, because for someone who is dead, he is gone, but the family is still here. And I think that sometimes it is a very traumatic situation for them to hear some of the very negative comments that Nigerians are dishing out and all of that. It's very, very traumatic. So even when you are alive, right, do things that will make people talk about you and think about your family, really. Think about your family with respect to how they are going to talk about you. So I think that Buhari has done his part and he's gone. It's not left for us to do our own part. But it's a very big lesson for everyone that is alive, for every leader that is alive, to do what is right.
Dengi Efa Angalapu, political scientist and research analyst with the Center for Democracy and Development, CDD, and DW correspondent in Abuja, Nigeria, Abiodun Jamiu, many thanks for joining us. As you have heard from the discussion, ultimately, the death of Muhammadu Buhari has evoked a wave of mixed emotions across Nigeria, reflecting a complex legacy marked by both staunch loyalty and deep criticism. An enduring testament to the divisive imprint he left on the nation's political and social landscape, we spoke to some Nigerians to also find out how they would remember the late President Buhari.
It is better to make Nigeria better for all of us, educationally, medically, economically, and otherwise. Because sincerely, it is a national embarrassment for our leaders to be dying outside the country, only to bring back their corpse into the country, in clinics, not even in hospitals.
As someone who deeply believes in Nigeria's future, I see his legacy as a reminder that more needs to be done, and there is need for fresh voices in the decision-making room.
Those were some Nigerians on the legacy of Nigeria's late former president, Muhammadu Buhari. So, how would you remember the late President Buhari? That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Eddie Micah Jr. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW Made for Minds.